Hello, I'm Jeremy Rivera, your unscripted SEO podcast host. I'm here with Christopher Gimmer, an entrepreneur, a builder. He's got good metrics and Snappa. I'm going to leave it up to him to introduce himself, give us a taste of his history, and give us an elevator pitch on those two SaaS that he's built. Have a lot of questions, a lot of history in the SaaS space. I'm curious about where they came from, but we'll get into it first, coming from your background.
Well, I'll give you the quick version, not to bore the audience, but my background was actually in finance and accounting. So I did that for 5 years out of university, and then eventually wanted a bit more freedom and flexibility in my life, and started kind of listening to business podcasts and reading books, and you know, read stuff like the 4-Hour Work Week and all those gems. And then I met my now co-founder Mark, who is a developer, and so we just started working on some side projects, and I started learning a lot about online marketing and SEO. And eventually, Snappa was kind of the project that hit and enabled us to quit our jobs and go full time on it. So we launched that back in 2015. It's still running to date, and actually we're doing a huge kind of overhaul right now. And then GoodMetrics is the most recent thing that we launched. And so, yeah, that's kind of the quick version of the story.
So software as a service is always fascinating for me, because it focuses in on a particular pain point, and then, you know, you have a subscription, so you have to like keep kind of iterating on how you address that particular pain point over time and make sure that you release new features, or you continue to, you know, be better than the other guys that also release those things. So let's dig into the first one, which is Snappa. Why don't you give a description of what that SaaS tool, what is the pain point that you identified that you wanted to fix? And what is the software tooling that you've created to kind of be that solve?
Yeah, so Snappa, the pain point there was before we even launched Snappa, some of the sites that we're working on, I was doing a lot of content marketing. And so for every blog post that I was publishing, I needed a featured image and then a lot of graphics within those blog posts as well. And so I'm not a designer, was never good with Photoshop. My business partner was decent with Photoshop, but it didn't really make sense for him to be wasting his time creating graphics, because he was doing more complicated development work. So that was kind of the idea, was basically just a graphic design tool for non-designers. And the kind of the idea too is that not needing to know all the sizing and dimensions for all the platforms, having preset templates, having a library of free stock photos. Because again, back in those days, like even just you finding a stock photo and importing it into Photoshop and then adding your text, and you know, it was a decent amount of work for an image that may disappear in a social media feed in a day or two.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the promise, was basically just like an online graphic design tool that was more geared towards you know, content publishers and online marketers like myself.
How long did it take you to get your first 50 subscribers to that SaaS after you launched?
So with Snappa, we were fortunate in that the previous business that we were working on was called Bootstrap Bay, which was a marketplace for Bootstrap themes and templates, which was a CSS framework. I don't think it's being used as much anymore, but I had written a blog post about where to get free stock photos. And this is when sites like Unsplash and Pexels and that Creative Commons CC0 movement had just started. And it went viral on the site called StumbleUpon, out of all places. I don't even know if that exists anymore. I'm dating myself here. But so next thing you know, we had we were ranking number one in Google for free stock photos, which was like a huge query, as you can imagine. And then we ended up parlaying that into our own free stock photo site called StockSnap. We ended up selling it a few years later. So when we had launched Snappa, we already had distribution in that we had this blog post that was ranking for free stock photos. We had our own free stock photo site. And so we literally just promoted Snappa to within those spots. And we did like, I think, 2,000 MRR in the first month or 4,000 MRR, something like that. And I think we got to 10K MRR in like 6 months. And that was like, you know, 95% of our signups were just coming from that one blog post and our free stock photo site.
That's like tripping and falling into a pot of money. I gotta say, having the luxury of, you know, landing upon, you know, I remember stumbled upon, being this random distributor of huge and insane amount of traffic and visibility, almost completely random in its nature. So, I definitely appreciate that. What has been your game plan, since then to sustain it? You know, 10 years in development time, there's a lot of, you know, changes in the programs. You know, you have 2023, you've got Midjourney coming onto the scene and other AI image generators. So what does the landscape look like for you right now, or what have you been working on in those 2 years since AI images became much less of a joke?
Yeah, so we didn't do much early on, and we kind of felt like a lot of the image tools were like, they were pretty cool, but they weren't quite there yet. They were okay at doing kind of background images or stuff like that. But when it came to designing like a legit YouTube thumbnail or, you know, like an event kind of graphic for Facebook, they weren't quite there yet. And I feel like that has kind of changed within the last few months with some of the newer models that came out. And that has essentially caused us to, basically, we're kind of in the midst of overhauling the product to go from a traditional drag and drop graphic design to more of an AI first design editor, I should say. Because when you think about it, like even if you're starting from a template, there's some restrictions in what you can create in Snappa when it comes to a thumbnail or any of these graphics. Whereas with the now utilizing AI, you can get way more intricate with, you know, multiple layers and multiple elements within your graphic that you would never really be able to create on your own, especially as a non-designer. So essentially what we're doing now is we're going to keep the existing Snappa editor as like a legacy editor that customers can continue using if they want. But we're basically moving more towards an AI first editor and utilizing some of these APIs. So yeah, we're definitely undergoing like a huge kind of transition with Snappa's product right now.
Yeah, I mean, I was a very early Midjourney beta tester. And, you know, it was basically like colored spaghetti making an impressionist and like, oh, yeah, it's a dragon. Yeah, if you squint. But it always struggled with text. And
text was the big one. And that's like one of the biggest things for Snappa is getting the text right.
Yeah. And it's in both text and placement, you know, those type of things on that wildcard interface is very difficult. So I could see a space, you know, see a SaaS space where it kind of bridges that gap and gives, you know, more of the design tooling and interface, but also some of that flexibility that comes from being able to prompt towards what you want. So excited to see where that's going to go. Do you have any idea of what models and APIs and accesses might be looking like the right mix for you?
Yeah, right now GPT seems to be the best model. So the nice thing for us is like we're obviously building it in a way where we can kind of swap between different models. So for us, if you know Grok's next model comes out and it's even better, Midjourney, we could always kind of fine tune and swap back and forth. But GPT seems to be like their latest image model. Seems to be really good right now.
While I know that you did have that number one ranking post and it was sending traffic, there's been a lot of seismic shifts in what Google will surface and rank. Do you still have that number one post? And is organic still a primary driver of your strategy for gaining audience, or have you had to shift and change that with the times as well?
With Snappa, it's definitely still a primary channel for us. And a lot of that is just because, you know, being around for 10 years and having the backlink profile that we do, we have like some pretty decent domain authority. We have a lot of posts that we've like ranked number one for, you know, like 10 years that we're always just updating and making sure that we're staying at the top. That being said, between AI overviews, that is definitely eating into some of that traffic. So our organic traffic has definitely gone down. Even though we're ranking number one for some of these keywords, the AI overviews are kind of answering some of those things. And so we're losing out on some of those clips. Obviously, for keywords that have a bit more commercial intent, something like, you know, Facebook cover maker is a landing page that we would have. You know, now you might see four paid links. So even if you're ranking number one for that organic keyword, your link is actually the fifth one on the page. And if you're ranking, you know, like number three, you're now like eight links down. So it's definitely, unfortunately, it's still a really good channel for us. Not what it was, you know, 5-10 years ago when it wasn't as aggressive with the paid placements, and there was no AI overviews that were stealing clicks. So I think for new sites, and we're kind of, you know, dealing with this with good metrics too, especially if you don't have a strong domain. I think SEO is maybe not as much of a glorious channel as it once was 10 years ago. So I think we're all kind of figuring out what this new world looks like from that standpoint.
Let's go ahead and transition topically over to good metrics. Tell the good folks who are listening, what would you say you do here, good metrics?
Yeah, so good metrics is basically an alternative to Google Analytics. Like many website owners, it was very frustrating going from Universal Analytics over to GA4. After talking with several other founders and kind of marketers in my circle, it was clear that I wasn't the only one that had a hatred for GA4. And so we thought that there was an opportunity to, you know, build a SaaS product in that space. And so essentially, number one, the big thing was just having a UI and an interface that was a bit more akin to Universal Analytics, but also build it in a modern way so that it's cookie-less and privacy-friendly. And the big benefit of that is not having to deal with consent settings and pop-up blockers or pop-ups, especially if you're in the EU and you're, you know, complying with GDPR and all that stuff. So that was kind of the big impetus for that product. And AI is changing the game as well in this space as well, because a lot of people are now kind of just connecting, you know, agents and AI tools and not logging into dashboards as much. So we recently released an API and MCP server. So now you can connect your website directly, or good metrics directly, to like Claude or ChatGPT. And basically, you know, query everything directly through an agent as opposed to, you know, manually doing it in the dashboard yourself. So that's been interesting as well.
I've played around with several different alternatives to Google Analytics over the years. What's your guys' approach to, do you call them events? Do you, like, what was in GA3 conversions?
Mm-hmm.
What's been your approach of you know, letting people flag, oh, hey, this person did this thing and I liked it and I want to keep track of them doing that particular thing? What's the approach that you took to that? And is there any, you know, different metrics or ways that you've collected data that are a unique data point or a different data point or approaching the same data through a different lens than people might be familiar with on Google Analytics?
Yeah, so to answer your first question, we've just stuck with events. I try to keep things simple as possible as opposed to having, you know, an event, but then a conversion and then a goal and like three different terminology for the same thing. So we basically call everything an event. An event could be anything from a sign up to a purchase to someone completing a form. Really, you can kind of define it however you want in many different ways. And then we also allow you to assign either a value or a property to that event. So for example, let's say you're tracking you know, subscriptions or trials, and there's a plan attached to that. So you can create one event for, you know, purchase subscription, and then you can toss a property like starter, team, or the plan name. You could also do things like you could automatically track all outgoing URLs through one event called, you know, click outbound link, and then you can attach the actual URL as a property. So that way it's not, you know, messing up your reports with like one event for every single link click. You can just have one event and then drill down at the property level. And yeah, if you want to attach a value to that, you can toss that in as well. And then basically we have different reports that break down, you know, the different segment or metrics by events. So you can look at your events broken down by completion location, by refer, by, you know, country, and any kind of, you know, you can kind of slice and dice it how you want. In terms of data collection, compared to GA4, it's very similar in terms of, you know, collecting the prefer, the country, and the full session and whatnot. I would say, again, the big difference is that we're doing it in a cookie-less way. So essentially what we're doing is we're taking a combination of a anonymized IP address and their user agent info and creating an anonymized visitor signature. So we can still recognize someone who comes back to the site as long as they're on the same network and using the same device without actually having to cookie them. Whereas with GA4, typically it's relying on cookies to do that. And there's, you know, you have to kind of configure consent settings. So for us, we just do it in a bit more of a simplified way.
Any special tooling or surfacing for, you know, GA4 just added its channel to finally surface, you know, traffic from crawlers and bots that are coming from AI queries. Are you surfacing, able to get query data from those visiting sources? Can you surface and show which LLM sent somebody?
So as long as it's in the as if they're passing a refer, then obviously we have that data or anything in a URL parameter. But that is something that we're kind of exploring, is this whole idea of what constitute a visitor, right? Because traditionally with analytics, you would have human visitors, and then you'd want to block out you know, crawlers and that kind of stuff, and you'd want to separate the two. But now, like, let's say, again, I'm using Claude Code and I'm telling my agent, hey, go read all the articles on the site, do a bunch of research and come back to me. Is that a should that be excluded? Is that a bot? Is that,
right.
you know what I mean? So I feel like there's this kind of gray area now. And I don't 100% have the answer yet, but I think there's going to be some sort of kind of, I don't even know what to call it, but almost like agent traffic.
There's agent traffic for sure. Yeah. I was just talking to, I think it was Mike Montague was my previous guest. And he was talking about that he was optimizing and helping people build specifically for agent to agent. In the B2B space, there's actually enough traffic now of agents that if they're configured, they can sell directly to agents.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
at the enterprise level, it's happening at a higher rate, but the smaller business field hasn't quite grabbed onto it that frequently. But there is that option of if you configure something on your site that can talk to a bot that's been sent by somebody to buy something, like there's agent to agent transactions, happening now, actually in the hundreds of thousands of dollars and soon to be millions of dollars of range of e-commerce. So yeah, definitely time to put on that hat and slice and create a second slice of all bot traffic just to better open up that window that Google Analytics refuses to and just give a little bit more data and visibility. And that way, as we're forced into this agentic future, I've had a number of different, agentic consults coming on, Mason McCumber, looking to try to prepare small businesses for the fallout of this technology, flooding into the field. And it's like with anything, it's like with Google Glasses, it was 20 years ago, it was too early. But now Ray-Bans put out, a pair of glasses that have cameras in them. Mm-hmm. And it's gone more mainstream. It's a little bit more stylish and less clunky. But I feel like the same thing is going to be happening with agentic levers. So yeah, anything you can do to open up more data for us to understand that crawl layer. Because 10 years ago, I didn't want to know what bots were. Like I needed to show real humans, but now that these robots might be walking around with wallets, now I'm interested.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, no, I agree completely.
I'm curious when it comes to your content marketing strategy for Google for good metrics. What's been your tack in content marketing? What's been your go-to-market strategy to get visibility? Are you trying to show up in these LLM queries in a specific different way than what you did for Snappa, or is your thinking about the type of content you put out altered or modified?
Yeah, so good metrics. We haven't gone too heavy on the content marketing side of things. We had a few challenges with the product itself and some of the infrastructure, and so we kind of wanted to get that cleaned up a bit before we kind of really ramped up on that side of thing. So it's been all that to say, we haven't focused too much on the content marketing side of piece. That being said, I do think, like I mentioned before, I think the kind of top of the funnel is more or less dead. A lot of those queries are kind of being answered with AI overviews. But I do think that it's pretty important to be publishing pretty in-depth content on your site to make sure that the LLMs have as much detail about your product as possible. So we've made a very concerted effort to make sure that our docs are, extremely well, pretty comprehensive and well written in terms of like all the features, everything that we do, how everything operates within good metrics, making sure that we've got, landing pages describing specific parts of the product and how it's different from, you know, Google Analytics and GA4. So we've focused more on kind of like the landing page and doc side of things, not as much on the what, you know, most people consider as content marketing with the blogging and stuff. That's not to say that we're not going to put a bit more emphasis on that into the future, but that's kind of been my thinking on that. And even developing kind of free tools or anything that's a bit more interactive than just, you know, a blog post with text.
It does seem like, you know, the winning strategies right now are considering SEO kind of within the middle of the Venn diagram. Like I used to think of like, oh, SEO and LLMs, like they overlap. And, you know, we have our stuff over here, but the more interviews that I do, the more I realize, no, we're everything that we do can and will have an impact on LLMs. If your site's not crawlable, if there's technical SEO issues, that's going to have a secondary impact on your LLM optimization, because if you don't show up in Google rankings, well, then a good portion of, you know, what is it, one third of LLMs, it's really just a fancy wrapper for a Google search, right?
Yeah.
They've got their training database, they have their data set that they're pulling from, and then they do their query fan out searches. So, you know, it's as much about trying to get into that training database, which is offsite SEO, you know, getting listed and mentions, being on podcasts and getting the signal distributed out that way. But there's definitely an argument to be made to make your value a little bit more than just, you know, a word that can be copied from one to another. And certainly tools, calculators, if they're available, secondary solutions to augment your primary, primary software solve definitely makes sense. Because in the messy world of analytics, there's a whole host of problems, right? You know, QR codes, there's UTM parameters, there's, you know, those elements that if you're thinking about telling your client, this is how we did, you have to think about those metrics, you know, and what is the story that I can build off of those? And that's a lot more difficult than just reading a blog post about it.
Yeah, definitely. Going back to what you're saying, that a lot of like recommendations from ChatGPT or Claude, a lot of them are just pulling like a bunch of listicles and kind of regurgitating some of that information. So, there's obviously a huge overlap between good SEO and getting visibility and AI mentions, even things like, you know, reviews and all that kind of stuff. And another kind of benefit too of like the tools and stuff is that, you know, it's hard to do kind of traditional link building now, just because like everyone's inboxes are full of spam and stuff like that. And so I think people are more willing and likely to link out to a really good tool that actually solves a problem versus yet another, blog post with, a wall of text. So, yeah.
I was just talking with my friend Michael McDougall of the Bright Thing Agency about, some of the factors in the link building world that have changed. One is, I think, and he agrees, that there's the concept of distance to seed. And if people don't know about this, it's basically Google saying there are authority sites within a particular vertical or a niche. Like if you're in the health and wellness space, then Johns Hopkins Hospital or, you know, the Ronald McDonald House, those are like authority sites. And if you are truly in that niche, then you are connected to them by one, two, or three hops, you know, like it's a, like Kevin Bacon or for backlinks. And so our hypothesis is that Google is relying more on that now these days were authority signals, and that storied or long-term SaaS sites might be a set of seed sites when it comes to secondary industries and niches. You know, certainly anybody in SEO that is linked to from Ahrefs or SEMrush, you know, if you're linked to it or you have a link from a site that gets a link from it, mm-hmm. you know, it has that positive reputation connotation. With the, you know, the proliferation of content spam posts and listicles out there, it seems to me that there's kind of an authority set of, if you own a SaaS, if you are a SaaS, then you kind of stand out in a certain way from other digital entities.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think there's definitely a lot of pure content sites that were kind of, you know, kind of got hit over the last kind of year or two. But it seems that anyone who's had like a legitimate product within a specific space tend to be doing much better than just a pure content site. So I'd probably agree with that.
Yeah, I think that in the end is really what Google was getting at with the HCU, with the helpful mm-hmm. content update, is they wanted to see brands that had stuff that they were selling versus yeah. just this exists as an information, but it was really created backwards because the incentive was ironically put out by Google to create all of these content sites that just, you know, yeah, they arguably had great answers. But yeah, there is this, if you have something to sell, then the information you're putting out, Google can kind of trust it to be more helpful because its objective isn't just to rank.
Yeah.
Like, or it is to rank, but not necessarily for just that thing. Like the value of it, of your site, goes beyond just the content on it. It kind of represents an entity, some sort of object, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like if you think about like pure affiliate sites, right? And just making up example, let's say someone's rating, you know, travel backpacks. The odds that there's usually a high correlation between the commissions that they're making on what they're recommending versus, you know, is it actually like if a pure niche site was had an article about the best travel backpacks and they couldn't make any affiliate commissions on the top 10 truly best backpacks, they probably wouldn't actually create that blog post. And so I think that's probably what Google's thinking. Whereas like if you're, you know, if you're like a travel brand and you've got this like one product, but then you also happen to write about other travel related stuff, yeah. Then maybe you can be more unbiased and because you're not worried about making commissions on whatever you're writing about. So it kind of does make sense.
Yeah, I mean, the game has definitely changed in terms of links. I mean, that's why I've changed my link building services at my agency to be more IRL and podcast centric link building strategies. You know, just having, you know, places, thinking of link building in terms of like co-marketing and connecting with other founders, you know, whether that's through interviews and conversations, it just seems to go a lot farther than, you know, the cold emails and of yeah. the past.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So we talked about Google Analytics. We've talked about link building and content. Is there any business challenges that you've faced as a SaaS owner that you're still kind of trying to sort out? Because I've got an unscripted SaaS podcast. I've got the unscripted SEO podcast. So when I give you an opportunity to ask my next guest a question that might help you, what's a problem that you've been facing? You're trying to mull it over and still figure it out and phrase it as a question for my next guest to answer.
Well, I think it ties into kind of what we've just been talking about for the last half an hour, which is, you know, we've like, you know, we're bootstrappers, so like we've never raised funding and stuff. And so organic was always a channel that was kind of tried and true to bootstrap software founders. And for all the reasons that we discussed, it's definitely getting more challenging, both in terms of like saturation and more, you know, more competition within those channels, but then also dealing with AI overviews and, you know, more paid listings and stuff. So I think the challenge going forward is like, how do you evolve beyond this tried and true content marketing playbook and go beyond that and test out kind of other channels beyond that, maybe start experimenting a bit more with paid. And yeah, basically like identifying other channels beyond organic that could still work well as a bootstrap founder.
Love it. I'll pass that on. I've had some interesting guests. I had Nick Eubanks from Digistore24, who had a humbling reminder that actually affiliates still play a pretty big, have a pretty big marketplace, and they can have a pretty big upside if done appropriately. So there's definitely the affiliate marketing channel to consider, and then podcasting. You know, as a channel, there's so many different ways that you can slice and dice it, that value, both in terms of audience capture, whether it's setting up your own podcast or finding a strategy to, you know, be out there and be guesting on those podcasts. I'm actually pioneering potentially a new service to see if I can find guests to build mentions for other brands. So have somebody who's on the podcast guest tour who might drop a mention and ask for a link in the show notes on the next show that they're on. So definitely some unique new channels, but The challenge is there. And I think it's more connected to a concept of finding and building community and audience, because Google's not giving it away like it used to. So, you know, that is a much harder play, but it, you know, if you build a community, you know, certainly you probably have like early beta testers who are super strong, but if you see if there's like a community aspect or angle that you can build, sometimes, you know, I saw SEO Gets, they just announced their ambassador program, and had some pretty big names, Aleta Solis, Kevin Indig, I think, in that bucket of people who had given beta test advice to him that they'd implemented, but now they're turning them into amplifiers for their particular GSE integration framework. So definitely that's my quick aside, but I'll 100% ask that question of my next guest. I appreciate you coming on. Give out a final shout out of how people can connect with you and help build you that community for your two SaaS, and shout out the domains. I'll make sure to link to these tools in the show notes for anybody who wants to check them out more in depth.
Sounds good. My X handle is cgimmer. I just recently joined LinkedIn after not being on there forever. So I'm Christopher Gimmer. You can find me there. And then you can check out snappa.com and goodmetrics.io. If you need a graphic design tool or better alternative to Google Analytics. And actually, if anyone is kind of on the graphics piece, I'd love to maybe chat with anyone that is kind of doing AI design, because we're just looking at this point too for a bit more feedback on the product that we're working on and what, you know, the different use cases and the kind of features that people really want to see. So anyone can feel free to just email me directly, christopher@snappa.com. Happy to chat about that.
Fantastic. Thanks for stopping by.
All right. Thanks for having me.